Welcome to The Doll Project. I'm your host, Saya the Jaffer. The Doll Project is a mini-series that explores dal, also known as lentils or legumes, and the rich and diverse ways that people of the South Asian diaspora cook it. It's also about storytelling, memory, migration, and culture. Natasha Bissonnette is from Montreal, Jojage, and is an art history professor at Emily Carr University. In this episode, she shares her take on Mauritian dal with red lentils and thyme, while teaching me the importance of slow and low.
My name's Natasha Bissonnette, and I'm an art historian. My family's from Mauritius, and so I learned how to make dal from Mauritians.
And so the recipe that we're going to be making today, is this something that a particular someone in your family taught you, or is it an adaptation of many people's recipes?
Yeah, I would say that it's actually a combination of what my mom would say is dal and her like red lentil soup. Different Mauritian aunties in my life will have their own dal. Some will add like squash, some will add clove and cinnamon, and my mom will have like her version. And so there's like, in my mind, there isn't a Mauritian dal. Because there are different dals that I learned from, I kind of make it differently every time. So the last time we were together, I did not use mustard seeds at the beginning, but I will today. First thing I'll do will just be to heat the pan. And so then I'll put the oil in just a few seconds, and then I'll do the seeds, the mustard seeds. I did not learn with recipes, and recipes make me anxious. and I'll be adding, you know, I'll be using other fats like butter and olive oil, but for now we'll just do like canola oil. So I've added some mustard seeds, and once the heat is where it's supposed to be, we will hear the mustard seeds are gonna start popping like popcorn. To me, I just always find that to be kind of like magic. It's like the food keeping track of time. And now I'm just gonna prepare the base, basically. And so that's onion, ginger, garlic. I'm tearing up some curry leaves right now because that'll enhance the flavor. So what I'm trying to do is make sure there's as much flavor as possible infused in the oil. So I'm just cutting some onions in the meantime. This is like half an onion. I'm gonna be adding some tomato as well to the base. All right, I guess it's time. Woo! And then grab some garlic. And so what I like to do with the ginger and garlic is to add some right now at the, what I call the base. But then I also like to add some once the lentils are boiling, just to kind of layer the flavors. Because some of it will get lost if you just put it all at once. I'm gonna add a tomato soon enough, and the juices of that will help with what's going on right now in the
oven. We're peeling and chopping three large cloves right now.
I'm just chopping them pretty, you know, fine, but if my mom were here, she would say it was not fine enough, Tosh.
Is your mom very precise about how she cooks?
Oh my gosh, it's like, she is. She grew up in the kitchen. Her mom would make food. And then her dad would sell it on the streets. Like after work, that was like his other job. And so food's a big part of her life. And a big part of my growing up, I would say. But it's funny, you know, I didn't learn necessarily until after I moved out. It was like difficult to get her to relinquish control. And if it wasn't, you know, absolutely perfect, it would be like not good. But once I left, I would call and she'd help me out. So I'm just cutting a half a tomato and put it in with everything. And
those curry leaves are smelling amazing.
Always, right?
So is cooking really kind of an intuitive experience for you? You mentioned earlier you generally try to avoid recipes.
Yeah, I do. I 100% avoid recipes. Yeah, I guess there's pros and cons. So I guess the con is that I'm always kind of cooking the things that I know how to do. But I'm always, you know, adding a twist here and there as well. I think with Mauritian food, I'll just say in terms of like my experience and my family, is there are certain foods that are just comforting. There's something comforting in knowing what we're gonna have is exactly like it always has been. I like making something that I don't need a recipe for. There's something comforting about that. So you can see the tomato is just kind of cooking down. I'm actually gonna add some herbs. I just had this here already chopped up, but this is parsley. Cilantro is the big one for sure. Mauritians, this is like, I think, what distinguish a Mauritian dal or a red lentil is the thyme. We put a lot of thyme in our food. It's French influence, African influence. I don't know where it comes from, but I don't really know of other dals. So that's like...
Yeah, that's definitely unique.
Yeah, exactly. These are fresh sprigs of thyme. That's a big one for us. So now I'm doing ginger.
You can definitely smell the thyme and the curry leaves combined, which is a unique smell.
So that smell right now is the base for like a lot of things in Mauritian cuisine. We're going to add some chili now. There's all kinds of ways one could do this. I'm just using red dry because that's what I have. I kind of like to make my food like not the spiciest because I like to have the spice on the side, so like a chili paste or an achar that's spicy, or an actual green chili that we just eat fresh with our food. So now it's going to be time to add in the main flavors that'll turn this base for a lot of Mauritian food into a dal. So this is curry powder. This is actually turmeric from my aunt's garden. So she, whoa, in Mauritius, so she gave me this as I was leaving. So she grows turmeric root in her garden and dried it up and made this.
That's so special.
Do you want to smell it?
Oh my goodness, it's so incredible and so fragrant.
Isn't it? So this just smells like medicine, basically. Some curry powder. But the main spice will be cumin. I don't have any, but if I did, one could also add coriander powder. I think I'm just gonna dump all this in. Again, we're just really treating the oil. We're really still just at that base of this dish. That's really what makes the dish, because I'm gonna add the lentil at the very end.
Can you say why you were adding water?
So it was thickening so that it doesn't burn. I'm trying to make this pasty and oily, so that's why I'm adding the water just a little bit at a time, slowly and slowly. I haven't added any salt yet, so I'll do that at this stage. And so yeah, the lentils have been soaking, and there's no real way to tell. I sound like my mother, where she's like, you know, when it looks like this, then you add the lentils. And I'm like, what does that mean?
Right. What would this mean in this context?
So you want the tomato to have the onions and the tomatoes, like everything's just kind of cooked down. Now that we've added the powdered spices, like all of that's kind of created this paste. It feels like the spices have been kind of cooked. And it'll continue to cook once I add the water and the lentils. Otherwise, it won't infuse. It'll just be kind of like the water and the spices won't mix. Mm. That's why you want it to just basically get in the oil and cook down. Lentils have been soaking in water, and I'm just going to add the whole thing to the bowl that's on the stove and have all of this come to a boil. But what I like to do is first make the dal with this limited amount of water, so it's this real thick dal, and then I'll add water later and then thin it out.
And is that because you like it thick, or is that a cooking technique because you think it might infuse the flavor differently or better?
I definitely think that's one of the effects, like it'll, in terms of infusing the dal with flavor. My intention is behind all that is for a creamy dal, but that isn't necessarily thick. I like a medium consistency.
You've mentioned a couple different times that you think about the turmeric that your aunt gave you smells like medicine, or could you say more about that?
Just the fact that there was so much care that I have direct access to because this is my aunt and it's her garden, and there was this whole process of the gardening and then the drying and the grinding. So part of the medicine is also part of that care, that I can be so close to that process. We're so alienated from these processes. So I feel lucky just to even be able to talk to her about how she did that. There's just a few things that are like always in my mom's fridge or my dad's garden, and cilantro is one of them for sure.
And that you would say is used in a lot of Mauritian cooking?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. If you're fancy, then you'll also have parsley, but cilantro is a must. Whether it's a dal or a curry or a hugai like you had the other day. Which is a more sort of African-inspired dish. But also, you know, fresh salads. So you see how it just came to a boil pretty quickly. So I'm just kind of stirring it vigorously right now because I don't want the bottom to stick. And you see it's turned into this very creamy dish. I kind of want this creaminess, to carry on. I'm going to add some more water, and then like that'll probably be it. But before I do that, I'm going to layer some more flavor. So I was going to do some more garlic and ginger, so I'm going to do that right now.
Do you have opinions on the use of fresh garlic versus chopped garlic that you keep in your fridge, or garlic paste you can buy in the store?
I grew up with my mom making her own paste, and it's just always so useful to have it around, right? So she would have ginger paste, garlic paste, and I mean, when she's making it, that's like, you know, her Sunday afternoon, but then we have it forever.
What did she put in her garlic paste?
Just garlic and water and oil, just a little bit of water and oil to make it a paste. I remember when I first left home, I just found it really useful to buy some, but it's not the same.
My mom still makes garlic paste, but she adds a little bit of lemon juice or vinegar to keep it. I still use it a lot when I'm cooking curries.
So, you know, I had mentioned that I just grew up with different recipes, and that this, I would say, is mine. So I think my mom would describe this as like, oh, so you've made like a dal recipe with red lentil.
Would she make a recipe like this, but just use a different kind of dal?
Yeah. The
chana?
Yeah, okay, exactly.
So this would be her chana dal curry.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just like going slowly with the water, but I don't want to like add more just because I want the garlic to cook a little. And then I'm going to add some more ginger.
What What would you typically serve this with?
So I love dal rice and a protein of sorts, or another vegetable like greens. Like, I like to do my saute greens pretty simple. It's like saute rapini, ginger, onion. It's sweeter than I thought. Yeah, I added some salt right now, and I'm going to probably add some more, but this is where I'm going to be adding and tasting and adding and tasting. But that's just me. I think at this point I'll usually add some more fat as well. I like to do butter. So that's just some goodness. At this stage, just be adding water and salt and just kind of have the flavors really like cook through. It's funny, it does taste a little different, but.
What's different about it to you?
It's like sweeter than I remember when we were talking about cumin and curry powder. I think I was like, oh, 2 to 1. Not always. And, you know, I'm not always using like my aunt's turmeric. I just happen to have that right now. Right. So I think it still needs to simmer, you know, it's still sort of cooking, I would say.
Well, I think it tastes delicious.
Thanks.
I found it really interesting to hear you talk about your aunt growing turmeric. You mentioned your dad had a garden and that your family's Mauritian. I wonder if you want to say more about how your family ended up in Canada.
Yeah, absolutely. My dad came first in the 70s to Canada. He was the first. He was like in his 20s and wanted to just sort of figure out another life for himself outside of Mauritius. Mauritius gained its independence in 68. And, you know, my dad's a teenager at that point. And so in 75 or something like that, he decides to leave. So very soon after, this new country is trying to figure itself out. So things get a little better economically, like in the 90s or something, right? So a lot of people were leaving, and Canada's immigration policies around under Trudeau, right?
Elliot Trudeau.
Yeah. So they were looking for laborers. He's worked his whole life in the restaurant business and then ended up marrying my mom, and then they got married in 79. And then we've been in Canada since.
So when you talk about your family having gardens, is that something that's common in either or both sides of your family, that people would grow some of their own food?
But yeah, my dad was always big on that, and it whether it be food or even flowers. Like, he definitely grew up on his side of the family, they had livestock, like chickens and cows, and his dad worked in the tea plantations. So my dad, being the eldest, would have helped in some way. So was very familiar. He really does enjoy it. He's growing grapes, and he's like really excited that there are grapevines in the backyards.
What other kinds of things does your dad grow?
Like, I remember as a kid, there were always tomatoes and cucumber. We eat the greens of pumpkin. So we never actually got to the point of getting pumpkin, but we would eat the greens throughout the summer. We'd make a kind of bouillon with it, or saute the greens. We would do that. The herbs, like the cilantro and thyme, he would grow. Right now, he's got grapes, berries. Okra is a favorite vegetable of mine.
When I think about people moving to a new climate and space, that food isn't always readily available that you're used to cooking with. And so do your parents have any stories, or do you have any memories of them not being able to access ingredients that they were used to in Mauritius, and how they adapted?
Absolutely, yes. So the curry powder that I used is just from here, but they curry powder from different places tastes different.
Well, because curry powder is actually a mix of other ingredients. It's not actually,
yeah,
it's not like a standard recipe, right?
And then just the way that those different ingredients will like grow in a certain climate will taste differently, right? So they would get they would smuggle in some packets of curry powder that would last them for a while, bring some for their other Mauritian friends. We get it here, but it's just special when it's from there. And there was a point in time where that was not readily available. Curry leaves, I'm actually used to cooking with them being dried just because they last longer that way. So, and sometimes they're like from Mauritius. They would dry them, pack them up, and then my mom would just use those. They'll go nuts whenever there's lychees or mangoes or things like that from usually an Asian shop. And if it's on special or something like that, like they're very big on indulging. And there's always a story. My mom grew up with a neighbor who had a mango tree, and then the mangoes would fall on the roof. Like, it was the neighbor's tree, but it was her roof, and it was this thing that the kids would do. They would go on the roof and take the neighbor's mangoes. But I remember as a kid hearing this story more than once, usually when we're eating mango.
There's a lot of memory tied into food.
Mm-hmm. All right. You know, immersion cooking is just very comforting to me. And, you know, if I'm feeling a certain way, then I'll just stick to the recipe. But there are certain things that I've decided to do that I really enjoy as well. So, for example, like when we were talking about sauteing greens, my mom will always do a base of like onion, ginger, and garlic. At times, I will just do onion, ginger, and the greens. Like, I like rapini, but it could just be spinach or kale, bok choy. And I like that there's a lightness there. So that's like a slight modification. Another one that I'll do that I really like, there's not really coconut milk in immersion cuisine. So I'll make the curry the way that my mom taught me, or even make the hugai, which is this like tomato-based Creole sauce dish, the way my mom would do it, or the way like Mauritians do it, and then I would add the coconut milk. And so it would be an entirely different dish, basically. That's how I make curry. The Mauritian curry, but with coconut milk.
I think often we think about food as being static when it's actually changing. And so how have you witnessed Mauritian cuisine change?
Yeah, I think there's definitely more catering available. And so now she'll just outsource a lot of things that she would have made herself, like the samosas, dal puris.
My mom used to make her own samosa pastry, or chapri, mm-hmm. as we call it. And then for a long time, she's been purchasing it from someone who makes it. And then she gives that to me too, so that I can make samosas. Yeah. So I don't mind making the filling and folding it, but the pastry is the most laborious part of it.
Yeah, making it from scratch. She would do that, her and her friends. There are certain things that they can just sort make an order. So that's different. And then, of course, the aunties will judge. Like, oh, it's not like mine.
Aunties but, are gonna auntie.
Yeah. Aunties are gonna. And I'm just like, it's better than making it for 3 days.
I was reflecting on, while we were cooking, that there's a patience to your approach to cooking, that you're not rushing the food faster than it is willing to be ready, that we're kind of adding a bit of water here, and then we want it to sort of hit a certain kind of consistency or look or feel or creaminess, and then we're going to kind of keep going. And just the way that, you know, we're adding garlic and ginger at different stages in the cooking process to kind of infuse in different ways. And it just struck me that it's caused me to reflect on a lot of the cooking that I sometimes do can be very utilitarian. I think it can still taste good, but I'm trying to do it as quickly as possible. And so I was just wondering if you have any thoughts about where that comes from for you. And is there something about the dish you're cooking or the way that you were taught to cook that informs that approach?
I appreciate those observations. I think it always sort of comes back to mom, but that's how she would always say, like, don't cook angry and don't rush it, because you'll taste it in the food. I guess I'm superstitious. I don't actually cook that often. I cook, but because a lot of these things that I do want to cook do take some time, or maybe I'm the one that's taking my time. But yeah, I don't want to rush it because I have the superstition that it won't taste as good. But I do also think that it's part of the chemistry, at least for the kinds of foods that we're making, right? Like a dal. Like, it's not like a steak where it's really just about the economy and that's what makes it excellent, right? Like rare, medium rare versus well done. No, I think that the time for the onions to really sort of sweat. Slow and low is my ideal for cooking, but I don't always have the time for slow and low. And so I think what I do is I won't cook as often and I'll make a big batch. I think it ultimately comes down to superstition.
I've been thinking about that with cuisine and some cuisines. Friends of mine gave me this beautiful Turkish cookbook. They're Turkish. And when I think about Turkish cuisine and other cuisines, that when you sit down to eat, there might be so many things you're eating. And each dish can take so much time to prepare, mm-hmm. right? And I just reflect on being around people who come from communities that their cuisine places so much emphasis on care in preparing food, and that you expect it to take a lot of time and that people will put that time in to prepare a meal, and how different that is to maybe how we consume food today and, you know, what's lost in that process.
I think there's just different things that make cuisine exquisite. The right knives for sushi. There are just so many different ways one can go, right? And what I have to offer in terms of food, I think, is why I don't have the right knives or the right skills in that sense, but I can spend time. There were times where cooking food for oneself was like hard, and then I realized that, oh no, cooking for oneself is a form of self-love, and so you want to cultivate that, right? And then of course that's how you're then able to cook for others. Growing up with mom who was that it's a big part of her identity. Cooking is like not a big part of my identity, but as a result, I think I've developed my own relationship that I had to be intentional about and not just like inherit.
Is there anything else that you want to share about the recipe or any other food memories that kind of tie into what some of the things we've been talking about?
I love this idea of connecting across dals, because, you know, I do think of South Asia, whatever that is, as more than a geography, whether it be various parts of Africa, the Caribbean, the Indian Ocean, and there are folks from all over making their lentil in their own way, right? Not just dal. Like this idea of connecting the image that I have in my head is that of a thread. I just think that there are multiple ways to really imagine these connections, and to do that through dal, I think it's quite generative. Like all the stories that'll come up for you in this project that resonate, that are different from one another, it just creates this archive.
Thank you so much, Tash.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dal Project. Follow me on Instagram at Dal Project. Email me at dalproject@protonmail.com. Dal is spelt D-A-A-L. Intro and exit music are excerpts from the song Creep by Lal. Thanks for tuning in.